This is Toby Sumter with your CrossPolitik Daily News Brief for Friday, September 18th, 2020. Today you'll hear about the city of Nashville scrambling to cover its hinder parts. Antifa is not a conspiracy theory, except maybe for those who associate with the movement and wish it was. And Minneapolis City Council is baffled by the lack of police enthusiasm in the city. Who knew? Remember, if you come across a news story you think we might need to cover, please send it to news@crosspolitik.com. This is a great way to share articles and stories with us that may end up in our daily or weekly shows. news@crosspolitik.com. Emails between Metro Health Department and Mayor John Cooper's office in Nashville suggest that there was some, shall we say, reluctance to release COVID numbers. According to emails obtained by Fox 17 on June 30th, contact tracing conducted by the MHD found construction sites and nursing homes were the cause of most Nashville coronavirus cases. Both categories had over 1,000 cases tied to each of them. At that time, only 22 cases were traced back to bars and restaurants. This isn't going to be publicly released, right? Just info for mayor's office, Leslie Waller from the health department wrote on June 30th. Senior advisor Benjamin Eagles responded, correct. Not for public consumption. But the mayor's press secretary, Chris Song, released a statement Thursday afternoon, just yesterday, saying that the TV station's report was aired with limited information and without context. Quote, a recent news story for Fox 17 Nashville was published with limited information without context using screenshots of Metro emails to falsely accuse the mayor's office and the Metro Public Health Department of withholding public health data that had previously been shared with and published by another local news outlet, the Tennessee Lookout, on August 4th, 2020. Emails from the same thread emphasizing the need to publicly release as much COVID-19 data as possible, which were omitted from the Fox 17 story, are attached. The only problem is that those emails attached are from the day before, July 29th. The emails in question were sent the following day, June 30th. Now, it's quite possible they were in the same email thread, but what they actually said was they were not for public consumption, those particular numbers. A month later, a Tennessee Lookout reporter, Nate Rao, asked the health department about rumors circulating that only 80 cases resulted from the city's bars and restaurants. Rao asked, the figure you gave of more than 80 does lead to a natural question. If there have been over 20,000 positive cases of COVID-19 in Davidson County, and only 80 or so are traced to restaurants and bars, doesn't that mean restaurants and bars aren't a very big problem? As a result, Metro Health Department official Brian Todd asked five other health officials via email for guidance. Please advise how you recommend I respond, he wrote. An unnamed sender whose contact information was cut out from the emails provided to Fox 17 responded, my two cents, we have certainly refused to give counts per bar because those numbers are low per site. We could still release the total, though, and then a response to the over 80 could be, because that number is increasing all the time and we don't want to say a specific number. Last month, the Nashville Convention and Visitors Corps estimated that the city's businesses have lost $2.4 billion so far in visitor spending during the coronavirus pandemic and are reportedly losing $100 million every week, according to the Tennessean. Cooper sent a letter last week to Tennessee Governor Bill Lee to request an additional $82.6 million in COVID-19 relief to assist Nashville's tourism industry, music venue, small businesses, and expand social resources. In other words, we need more money to keep everything closed because we need free money and we also need to not open anything. Speaking of which, the Fight Laugh Feast conference, formerly being held in Nashville, has moved down the street due to this craziness. We've moved from Rocketown in downtown Nashville to the TOA Sports Performance Center in Franklin, Tennessee, just 20 miles south out of town, where we will be free to party without any COVID restrictions. If you are already registered for the conference, you should have an email in your inbox with details about hotels that are right there, basically across the street from the new venue. The website is being updated to reflect this change. Move that hotel over, come to Franklin. The party is still on, and there are only, I don't know how many seats are left. It's about to be sold out. So if you're going to register, do it now. remember, psalm singing, feasting, a lineup of speakers, Douglas Wilson, George Grant, Glenn Sunshine, Rod Martin, Jeff Durbin, David Bonson, the Cross Politic crew, and the whole Fight, Laugh, Feast network in the house, along with Darren Doan, filmmaker, Don't Be Precious, After Hours, Meet and Greet, October 1st through the 3rd. Go to fightlaughfeast.com and register today before it's too late and we're all full up. Next story is from a listener who sent it to the Cross Politic inbox, Cross Politic. It's news at crosspolitic.com. Is Antifa, which is short for anti-fascist, a made-up right-wing conspiracy theory like COVID? Oh, sorry. FBI Director Chris Wray, appearing at a House Homeland Security Committee hearing Thursday, explained that while Antifa is not an organization in the traditional sense, it is a movement, and they have suspects who claim to be part of it. I mean, if people say they're part of something called Antifa, I guess it must exist. Antifa is a real thing. It's not a group or an organization. It's a movement or an ideology. Maybe one way of thinking of it. Maybe we could call it a religion, Ray said. And okay, he didn't say the part about religion. I added that part. He says, and we have quite a number. I've said this quite consistently since my first time appearing before this committee. We have any number of properly predicated investigations into what we would describe as violent anarchist extremists, and some of those individuals self-identify with Antifa. Notice how he said self-identify. Boom. Mic drop. He just used their language. He owned them. Hey, they self-identify as Antifa. Now what? Ray's words were in response to Representative Debbie Lesko in Arizona, who claimed prominent Democrats have called Antifa, quote, a fantasy. In July, Representative Jerry Nadler from New York dismissed the idea of Antifa violence in Portland as a myth that's been spread only in Washington, D.C. Later in the hearing, Representative Donald Payne from New Jersey asked for clarification about the nature of Antifa, and Ray explained, Antifa is a real thing. It's not a fiction, but it's an organization or a structure. It's not an organization or a structure. He again described it as more of a movement, but again noted that there have been those who self-identify, notice he used that word again, as being part of it. Speaking of Antifa, on August 7th, black activist Regina Gray was tackled by Portland police at a protest, the mythical protest. It was a mythical tackle. No, she was actually arrested, charged with disorderly conduct, resisting arrest, and interfering with an officer. The same day, conservative Portland activist Andy No, spelled N-G-O, you might have seen his name around, shared Gray's name and mugshot on Twitter. Don't worry, though. Representative Nadler says, you weren't there. Gray, 30, is charged with interfering with an officer, resisting arrest, and more, No wrote on Twitter. She was arrested at a violent Antifa protest in Portland and quickly bailed out. Gray is frequently photographed with kids at protests and rants about white terrorism. The photo was retweeted by 475 people. 12 nights later, on August 19th, a man showed up on the doorstep of Gray's mother's East Side home. He was sweaty and nervous looking, and he asked for Regina by name, says Lucinda Fisher, Gray's mom. He mentioned Gray's son, and I noticed he had a gun in his hand. Fisher slammed the door and called the police. So there's no evidence that there's any direct connection between crazy guy, sweaty guy, and a gun showing up here at Gray's mother's house. But she's understandably a little freaked out. No's prominence has been catapulted by Portland's protests. He's editor at large at a Canadian conservative website called, do they have conservatives in Canada? Anyways, a website called The Post Millennial. I guess it's about eschatology. And is also a regular guest on Fox News. Last year, he was assaulted at a Portland anti-fascist march where masked assailants punched and kicked him in the head. No has more than 700,000 followers on Twitter, many of whom share the belief that Portland protesters are a threat to national security. Well, they are throwing heavy objects and burning things and breaking things. Critics call No's posts doxing and posting personal information about people to make their lives unpleasant. But what No is doing is legal. The mugshots are public records. The arrests happened. Like, they really did go to a riot. They really were arrested, and there's mugshots. taken of them when you get arrested. And No told the online newspaper Willamette Week that it is his duty to report on protesters who have been arrested, given the risk that violence and riots present to the public. No wrote Willamette Week via email, saying, "I believe my duty as a journalist includes informing the public about individuals who are believed by criminal authorities to be sufficiently dangerous to the public that they meet the standard for arrest." Another example of this is Portland couple Aaron and Philip Wenzel, starting their evening Friday, August 14th, as they have more than 10 times before that, you know, just the normal sort of evening, donning their protest outfits, full gas respirators, masks, bike helmets, and a bulletproof vest for Philip, who had been in the front of protests as part of the drum line. You know, just ordinary thing that couples do in the evening. Hey, you want to go out for a riot? Aaron, a medic toting a first aid kit, usually settled in a few rows behind the line of drummers. She's the conservative one. That night, Philip was arrested. The next morning, No posted his mugshot on his Twitter account, writing that Wenzel was arrested at the violent Antifa protest, hashtag Antifa. The responses on Twitter were about what you would expect, including unpleasantries and threats. On August 18, 3 days after No posted the mugshot, Philip Wenzel's boss at Elizabeth Christie Law Firm sent him a letter that the firm had received 50 threatening or harassing communications since his arrest, and a couple weeks later sent a second letter informing him that he would be laid off, citing loss of work leading to a reduction in staff. The managing attorney at the firm insisted that the layoff had nothing to do with Wenzel's protesting. Both Wenzels say they now suffer from anxiety. You go out to riots for your date nights. I don't know what to tell you. Wenzel shaved his beard to change his appearance and now wears a hat when he walks his dog. In his response to questions from the Willamette Weekly, No contends he is taking on violent criminals that other journalists are afraid to confront. If you feel that transparency and public right to know should be outweighed by arrestee rights to privacy, this is a complaint for the legislature, not for journalists reporting in compliance with state and federal law, he said. A better question would be, why do some journalists feel compelled to hide the identities of suspected criminals from the public? Another would be, whose interest does the suppression of criminal arrest data serve? Not so pretend, Antifa. Not so mythical, real. In fact, so real that those participating in the protests, even though they want them to be fake, they want them to be mythical, are a little miffed that they're actually very real. In fact, once you start kicking and punching and throwing things and doing violent things, sometimes those who live by the sword die by the sword. Okay, lastly, the meeting was slated as a Minneapolis City Council study session on police reform. That's not how it went. For most of the 2 hours, the same city council that led efforts trying to defund the Minneapolis police pressed Chief Madaria Arredondo to tell them how the department is responding to all the violence in their city. The number of reported violent crimes like assaults, robberies, and homicides are up compared to 2019, according to MPD crime data. More people have been killed in the city in the first 9 months of 2020 than were slain in all of last year. Property crimes like burglaries and auto thefts are also up. Incidents of arson have increased 55% over the total at this point in 2019, including one very famous target. Council President Lisa Bender, who was among those leading the call to overhaul the department, suggested that MPD officers are being defiant. You think? Her constituents say officers on the street have admitted that they're purposefully not arresting people who are committing crimes. Yeah. Well, you kind of sent some mixed messages there. Other council members said officers are telling residents that they are overworked and understaffed. Also probably true. Arredondo said around 100 officers have left the department or have taken leave since the beginning of 2020. Not surprised. That's more than double the usual number of officers who either step down from the department or who are inactive each year. Council members in wards, which usually don't see high levels of violence, say their constituents are feeling terrorized. But on one city council member, Felipe Cunningham, was really feigning deep surprise. What I'm sort of flabbergasted by right now is colleagues who a very short time ago were calling for abolition of the police department are now suggesting we should be putting more resources and funding into MPD. Turns out ideas have consequences. Actions have consequences. We live in a real world with real world consequences. Ideas have consequences. Words have consequences. Thoughts, actions have consequences. You reap what you sow. That's because this is God's world. He made it, and it runs according to his rules, his law. And in this world, Jesus rose from the dead. And there's nothing that any of this insanity can change that. This is Toby Sumter with CrossPolitik News. Remember to send us stories and articles that you think we should cover to news@crosspolitik.com. You can find this and all our shows at crosspolitik.com or on our app, which you can download in your favorite app store. Just search Fight, Laugh, Feast. Support Rowdy Christian Media and become a Fight, Laugh, Feast club member. Get a t-shirt and access to tons of behind-the-scenes discussions, content. You also get $100 off your registration for our first annual Fight, Laugh, Feast conference, where we hope to meet many of you in Franklin, Tennessee, right outside Nashville. October 1st to the 3rd, go to fightlaughfeast.com. Register now while space is still available.